This past Easter, agitators profaned Easter services at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. God-haters burned Bibles in front of an evangelical church in Tennessee. Joe Biden's White House censored Easter egg designs portraying the resurrection. And Joe Biden himself promoted behavior offensive to the God of Easter on Easter. If you're a follower of Jesus, how did that make you feel? How do you think it made God feel? And how do you think Jesus would have responded? Would he have ignored it, reacted to it, or co-opted it? Now, that's what I want to talk about today. And I want to talk about how you can respond in productive ways. This is Brad Bright. Welcome to the God is Issue podcast, where I show how to make God the issue in every issue. Now, let's start talking about what happened at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York on Easter Day. Radicals, burst into St. Patrick's Church on Easter, disrupting the evening vigil in order to create controversy so they could grab headlines. Now, see, they understood that controversy is a powerful tool for advancing an agenda. As I often say, controversy is my friend because it creates curiosity and grabs people's attention. It's called free advertising. Now, the agitators pushed to the front of the sanctuary, unfurled a banner, and chanted their little slogan. The irony is they disrespected God while demanding respect for their cause. Now, the service continued on in the midst of the chaos, while individuals moved to expel the unwelcome invaders. However, the activists got what they wanted. They created controversy, which enabled them to dominate the next few news cycles with their agenda. You see, they hijacked the Easter service at St. Patrick's as a platform for their message. They were pretty shrewd. You may not like them, but you can't ignore them. Now, that's how Roman culture in the first century viewed the Apostle Paul as well. But the question here is, what, if anything, could the folks at St. Patrick's have done differently to quickly regain control of the situation without giving the agitators an even greater platform? Now, the congregation could have all booed in unison, drowning out the protesters. But that would have been a reaction to the protesters, creating even more controversy around the issue, which is exactly what the protesters wanted. They wanted to draw attention to their cause. Besides, I rather doubt Jesus would have led a booing session had he been there. However, Jesus always acted in a way to take control both of the situation and the agenda. Now, given those criteria, what would you have done? Let me tell you a story that I've told in at least one recent podcast, but I'm going to tell it again. Years ago, my dad was visiting an Asian nation. He had been asked to speak at a meeting one evening, but the staff began hearing rumors that a group of radical agitators were planning to stone him if he attempted to speak. Now, that evening, when my dad stood up to speak, sure enough, a number of men stood up with stones in their hands. Immediately, my dad stopped speaking and led the audience in singing praise to God. The agitators dropped their stones and fled the room. Now, the truly ironic part of that story is my dad can carry a tune in the bucket. I'm kind of like him. And I say that activists in America will flee the room if the congregation breaks out in songs of praise and worship to God? No. But think about it for a moment. If agitators burst into your church and everyone immediately breaks out in Amazing Grace or any of the great songs or hymns of the faith, the music will both drown out the protesters and will be heard on the evening news. Now, folks, that's great publicity for your church and God. Now, the congregation can keep singing songs of praise to God for the next hour if need be. Now, at the same time, instead of trying to forcibly remove the agitators, people from the congregation can just quietly go up on the platform, stand in front of the banner, blocking it visually, while still singing songs of praise to God. The congregation can go up there in mass, in fact, and fill the stage, surrounding the troublemakers. Now, what can the agitators do at this point? They can't be heard. They can't be seen. They become pretty irrelevant. So instead, that evening, on the evening news will show people singing Amazing Grace or another hymn of praise to God, drowning out the protesters both audibly and visibly. Can you imagine the headlines the next day? Protesters succumb to Amazing Grace. Folks, never react to agitators or to troublemakers. If you react, they win. They get what they want, which is publicity. See, you swamp them, you surround them, you ignore them, you drown them out. You know how to kill a cause of protest? Ignore it. If everyone ignores it, it dies. See, a protester's worst nightmare is to be either ridiculed or ignored. Every church needs to develop a plan of how they will respond when this happens to them. You see, as our culture becomes more and more anti-God, this becomes a greater and greater likelihood. You only need one person with a powerful voice to get it started. Certainly, music pastors should be prepared at all times to step in at a moment's notice to lead the congregation in rousing hymns of praise to God. May I suggest you go to your pastor or priest and suggest they develop a plan in case this happens in your church? Folks, I think we're going to be seeing this type of thing happen more and more in the years to come. But if you deal with it right the first time, it's not likely to happen a second time. This is the sort of thing Jesus did all the time. He had a knack for quickly wresting control of both the situation and the agenda, moving from defense to offense in the blink of an eye. See, the key is to never react purely defensively like they did at St. Patrick's on Easter. Figure out how to make God the issue in every situation, including when agitators try to hijack your Easter service. Now, those are my thoughts. I'd love to hear your thoughts about how you would respond in a situation like that without giving agitators a greater platform. But let's move on. Let's move on to Joe Biden's White House flyer censoring children from designing any Easter eggs that portray the resurrection. First, let's review the facts. There are a lot of brazen falsehoods out there on this one, folks. The White House authorized a flyer that requested submissions from children of National Guard families for Easter egg designs. Now, here are the pertinent excerpts from the flyer. Let me read them to you. Celebrating Easter is one of the oldest time-honored traditions at the White House. Since 1878, American presidents and their families have celebrated Easter Monday by hosting an egg roll party. So far, so good. But then it goes on. It says, in 2021, and that's key, in 2021, that's 3 years ago, the White House expanded on this long-standing tradition by displaying youth-designed Easter eggs in the White House. And you flip to the back of the flyer, and it has lists and rules and restrictions. Under restrictions, this is what it says. The submission must not include religious speech, overtly religious themes, etc. Folks, those are just the facts. However, NBC reported that the guidelines banning religious themes from the eggs have been in place for decades. But folks, the flyer clearly states that this tradition began in 2021, the year Joe Biden became president. That doesn't sound like decades to me, does it to you? But now here's the biggest problem. The White House wants to celebrate Easter, that is, the resurrection of Jesus, by forbidding any representation of the resurrection of Jesus. Now, that'd kind of be like celebrating my son's birthday, but forbidding anyone to say or sing his name or even mention his age. And folks, that would be really kind of weird. It'd be uncomfortable. Now, Joe Biden, who claims to be Catholic, forbid children from designing eggs reflecting the meaning of Easter during the White House celebration of Easter. That's not neutrality toward Christianity. That's open hostility. It was anti-Christian. It was anti-Catholic. It's government censorship of free speech and religious practice. You see, with his mouth, Joe claims to be Catholic. But his actions are very anti-Catholic. And for at best, folks, that's really kind of weird, isn't it? But you see, the more important issue here is how do we respond? How do we as Christians respond? First, we need to ask God to replace any and every politician who refuses to uphold their oath to protect and defend the Constitution with someone who will. Now, secondly, intentionally make the resurrection of Jesus the issue at Easter where you live. Let me explain why and then how. Why? Because a lot of younger Americans don't even know what Easter is. They think it's about painted eggs and cute little bunnies. Folks, they're clueless because they've never been told. It's not their fault. Now, just before this most recent Easter, Jesse Waters had his assistant do a man-on-the-street kind of interview with people in New York. It was surprising how many of the young people had absolutely no clue what Easter is about. It's our job as followers of Jesus to tell them. Now, here's why I say this. The problem in America today is not that there's too much darkness. The problem is there's not enough light. And the only way to get rid of darkness is to shine a light in the darkness. Darkness is simply the absence of light. That's all it is. So if you don't like darkness, go shine your light. Now, if you don't, who will? Joe Biden? I don't think so. Now, let me talk about the how. Here's the easiest way I've thought of to do this. Now, I decided that next year, I'm going to put 2 yard signs in my front yard. One that says Happy Easter, and the other that says He is Risen. We live just 2 blocks from the local elementary school. Every bus that goes to that school drives by our home every morning and every afternoon. Now, on Good Friday, before the school buses arrive, I'm going to put a cross in our front yard. Then on Sunday, I am going to put up 2 signs next to each other that say, Happy Easter, and He is Risen. I'll put them right in front of the cross. I'm also going to put up brightly colored Easter egg signs to draw in the eyes of every child who drives by. See, every school child will see the sign, Happy Easter, and then right next to it, He is Risen. Folks, that will create mental linkage between the two statements. That's the power of visuals. See, the goal is to put the image in their heads so that whenever they hear or see Happy Easter, they will also think He is risen as well. Now, if they don't know what He is risen means, they will probably ask a friend sitting next to them on the bus or go home and ask their parents. They may even ask their teacher at school. The point is to use the visual eye gate to really create the connection in the mind of every child who passes by my home. I intend to leave it up for the entire week following Easter, so the message has plenty of time and opportunity to sink in. The other thing Kathy and I want to do is write a small, easy-to-give-away booklet for children explaining the meaning of Easter, you know, using bright and colorful pictures. Now, I looked online for something like that, but I could find nothing. I was actually surprised someone hadn't already created something like that. So if next Easter you want something to give away in your neighborhood over Easter weekend, go to brightmedia.org. Unless I die from my cancer first, which I doubt, we should have them available for you to order. Now, let me encourage you to start preparing for next Easter today. Our culture still celebrates Easter. They just don't know what it is they're celebrating. Folks, to me, that sounds like a huge, huge opportunity. Put up a cross in your front yard before Easter. On Easter Day, put up signs next to each other saying, Happy Easter! And He is risen. It's easy to do. It's effective because people can't unsee something once they've seen it. I've already ordered the Happy Easter and He is Risen signs from mynativity.com. I looked at a number of online sites, but chose these particular signs because they appear to be very well made and easy to store. I don't know anything about the folks at mynativity.com, but I commend them for making what appears to be a very good product. If you want to get even more ambitious, folks, hand out colorful booklets for children explaining the meaning of Easter. You could even create a one-page flyer of your own, inviting them to church at the bottom of the page. Get one of your pastors to help you create it. But don't overcomplicate it, and make sure it's colorful and attractive so the kids will want to read it. Now then, why do I focus on kids? Because first, they are more likely to respond. And secondly, if you make it simple enough for a child to understand, and even adults can understand too. Well, those are my thoughts. And again, I would love to hear your ideas about how you have helped your neighbors better understand the meaning of Easter. But finally, I want to talk about Joe Biden not only prohibiting Easter eggs designs about the resurrection of Jesus, but also promoting behavior on Easter Day the Bible says is offensive to the God of Easter. Now, on Easter Day, Joe issued a proclamation. Here is what it said. Let me read it to you. Now, therefore, I, Joseph R. Biden, Jr., President of the United States of America, by virtue of the authority vested in me by the Constitution and the laws of the United States, do hereby proclaim March 31st, 2024, as Transgender Day of Visibility. I get it that presidents sign a lot of proclamations for a lot of different causes. I get it that Easter only falls on March 31st less than once a decade. I get it that Joe Biden claims to be Catholic but doesn't seem to believe what the Catholic Church teaches. But this goes way, way beyond that. You see, on the same day he prohibited religious designs for White House Easter eggs, which is a religious holiday, he actively advocated for a cause offensive to the God of Easter and to every true follower of Jesus. See, with his words, Joe says he's a Catholic, but his actions seem to suggest otherwise. But that's not the most important issue. The critical issue is, how should we as followers of Jesus respond? First, and let me be very strong on this point. Do not diss on people who believe they're a gender that they're not. They're broken. They're deceived. Many are probably mentally ill, and they're definitely spiritually blind. They don't need your condemnation. They need your pity, your help, and your prayers, especially your prayers. Have you ever noticed that the more you pray for someone, the harder it is to hate them? Have you ever noticed that? See, getting mad at a blind person for stepping on your toe tells me more about your heart than about the blind person. You don't get mad at a blind person for stepping on your toe. It may hurt, but you don't get blind. You don't get mad at them. You have compassion, and you offer to help. But second, don't ever enable broken people in their brokenness. See, enabling alcoholics only makes the problem worse. Likewise, enabling broken, gender-confused people only makes the problem worse as well. See, Jesus loved broken people deeply, but he never enabled them in their brokenness. Instead, he always offered them a way out, and we should always follow his example. I like to put it this way. Be like Jesus. Love more, tolerate less. Now, what does that even mean? It means offer real acceptance, but don't use their preferred pronouns. That's enabling. That's reinforcing their delusion, which is not loving. See, Jesus never reinforced people's delusions. Instead, he offered them real acceptance, and we should do likewise. And that begins by asking sincere questions to help you understand why they think they are something they are not. Ask them what pushed them that way. Take a real interest in them and their story. Try to really understand the why of who they are, and do not be argumentative. You see, until they feel understood, they're not likely to listen to anything you have to say about Jesus. And there's a big difference here, folks, a big difference between understanding someone and agreeing with them. Using their preferred pronouns communicates, for better or for worse, that you agree with them and therefore disagree with God. Don't go there. Don't misrepresent God. Listen to them. Love them. Serve them. Tell them that Jesus loves them. But like Jesus, never enable their brokenness. Try your best to never misrepresent God. I have some very broken folks in my life who are very gender confused. They're truly broken. I love them, but I never enable them. I don't use truth as a bludgeon because I care for them. However, I don't misrepresent the truth either. So folks, be like Jesus. Love more and tolerate less. Which brings me back to Joe Biden. Jesus said, love your neighbor. That includes Joe when he censors religious speech on the same day that he promotes behavior that the Bible calls sin. However, we should never tolerate or enable any of his anti-God actions. What does that mean? It means you pray for him. Pray that he will either repent or that God will remove him from office. God put him there. God can remove him just as easily. It means don't be fooled by his words when his actions and his words don't match. In other words, love more, tolerate less. See, God is the issue in every issue, from dissing on Easter to using make-believe pronouns to promoting trans day of visibility. God himself must always be our compass on every issue. This is Brad Bright. Thanks for joining me today. And if you found this podcast helpful, please like, subscribe, or share. God bless. And remember, be like Jesus. Love more. Tolerate less.